All right, we're back on the record. At this time, we'll proceed with NSP witness, Stephen Wishart. All right, Mr. Wishart, you were present and heard me instruct as to penalties for perjury, were you not?
I was.
Thank you. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under the pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
And you have a nice volume to your voice. I appreciate that. All right. At this time, Mr. Johnson, please proceed. I'm sorry, Ms. Valley is going to handle the examination.
Thank you, Judge Fetch. Mr. Wishart, you have in front of you what are marked as Exhibits 16 and 17, which are your copy already admitted copies of your supplemental testimony and rebuttal testimony in this proceeding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And do you have any corrections to your testimony today?
I do.
And could you please identify those?
In my rebuttal testimony, I have several places where I state the incorrect name of staff consultant. Many instances reference Mr. Mugrace when they should reference Mr. Pavlovic.
And can you identify those instances?
Okay, I can. It's a long list. On page 2, lines 4, 14, and 17. On page 3, lines 18 and 24. On page 5, lines 1, 4, and 16. Page 6, lines 4 and 6. Page 7, line 11. Page 9, lines 20 and 21. On page 10, line 4. On page 11, lines 20 and 26. On page 12, line 26, on page 13, lines 1 and 13, page 14, line 24, page 15, line 14, page 16, line 25, page 18, line 6, page 8, also on page 18, lines 9 and 18.
For the record, I believe Mr. Mugrace,
pardon me,
pronounces his name. Is it Mugrace? Mugrace, but...
Apologies.
Thank you. I've rarely heard a name so butchered so many times. Thank you.
And Mr. Wishart, do you also have in front of you which an exhibit marked as Exhibit B?
I do.
And does under C, does that identify the 17 PPAs that you've discussed in your rebuttal testimony?
It does.
Thank you. Mr. Wishart, do you have an opening statement today?
I do.
Please proceed.
The opening statement is labeled NSP 30 and by stipulation is admitted into the record. And Exhibit B, Ms. Valley, was identified last night, and that document was requested, actually, by Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle. So Exhibit B is admitted into the record as well. Go ahead with your opening statement, Mr. Wishart.
Commissioners, Judge Fetch, Commission staff, good afternoon. I am Steve Wishart, Director of Resource Planning for the company. My testimony addresses the company's recovery of the cost for the Prairie Rose project, as well as staff's consultants' concerns regarding 17 other power purchase agreements, or PPAs, the costs of which are currently recovered through our fuel cost recovery tariff. We agree with the staff's consultants' assessment that the Prairie Rose project is prudent, and that, therefore, the company should be able to recover all of its costs for the project. We also believe that continued recovery of the 17 other PPAs is appropriate. However, the PPAs that I address are not included in base rates. While we appreciate the Commission's interest in these PPAs, the issues raised by staff should properly be reviewed in a separate proceeding. We understand the Commission's concerns. And as Ms. McCartan has stated, we have committed to providing the Commission with the opportunity to fully review our resource decisions in a timely manner. I look forward to working with the Commission staff on our next long-term resource plan, making sure that our strategy is fully vetted with them and that their desires and concerns and that the desires and concerns of North Dakota are incorporated. In my rebuttal testimony, I point out that most of the purchase power contracts identified by Mr. Pavlovic have been operating on our system for several years and were included in the fuel cost rider in compliance with established rules. The criticism of these contracts is based on 2020 hindsight and does not consider all the factors that were in place at the time the decisions were made. Such retrospective judgment does not comply with longstanding practice in North Dakota. We make our business decisions based on the best information available at the time. Many of the identified contracts were acquired at a time when natural gas was at an all-time high, and our assessment was that the contracts could be a cost-effective way to protect our customers from the volatile natural gas market. We do want to work with the Commission and staff to respond to the concerns raised. If the Commission would like to review these PPAs further, the appropriate place to do so is in a separate proceeding reviewing our FCR and the PPAs we recover through it. This would also allow the opportunity for the Commission to review our FCR mechanism and the information we provide so that we can ensure it meets the Commission's needs and the projects reviewed on a prospective basis. Fundamentally, we manage our system to serve customers in our five different jurisdictions. I believe that the benefits of the integrated system far outweigh policy differences between the states. NSP offers an incredibly diverse portfolio of resources that has delivered reliable power to all five states in the NSP system at a lower cost than any one state could have achieved on its own with an isolated system. We are happy to work with the Commission and their staff on a prospective basis to ensure that we meet the expectations, their expectations, and that the integrated system continues to benefit North Dakota ratepayers. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I will do my best to answer questions about these issues and any other resource planning related questions that parties may have.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Wishart is available for cross-examination.
Thank you, Ms. Valley. Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Wishart.
Morning.
Looking at the various contracts that the advocacy staff witness recommends removing from the fuel cost rider in North Dakota, and these are the ones on item 7, is that correct? 7, item C.
Is that Exhibit correct? B, item C. Okay.
Were these projects modeled for cost effectiveness at all? And if so, how?
I was not personally involved in some of these contracts. Some of these contracts predate my involvement in the resource planning area. I was involved with the economic analysis of some.
Which ones were you involved in?
To the best of my recollection, I evaluated the two solar contracts, the CODA biomass contract, the Moraine Wind. And I believe that's all.
Do you know, in addition to the four projects that you identified that you worked on, in any of the other 17 or the other 13, what approvals have been gained for these purchase power contracts in the company's portfolio?
Many of these are under the 50 megawatt limit that requires application of a certificate of need. I believe they all do. Yeah, they're all under 50 megawatts.
So no jurisdiction has approved these contracts?
No, but they were added to the fuel cost recovery rider in accordance with the established rules of that rider.
Does the Minnesota Commission review costs recovered through the company's fuel cost adjustment in Minnesota?
I'm not aware of the commission's review process for the fuel clause in Minnesota.
Okay. Do you know who would be familiar with that process?
Of the remaining witnesses, I'm not aware on counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I'm not aware of which of our witnesses would be able to respond to that question, but we'll certainly review that and see if we can identify someone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Ms. Valley. You had stated in your rebuttal testimony, there was the contention, I believe, that advocacy staff is requesting North Dakota customers receive energy for free. Are North Dakota customers currently receiving free energy because they aren't paying for the Prairie Rose contract?
No, per agreement with the commission, when the Prairie Rose contract was removed from the FCR, we also removed the associated energy, and that was not staff's recommendation, as I read it, for the other contracts.
So how are North Dakota customers paying for energy right now that would be priced at the Prairie Rose contract price otherwise?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
If North Dakota customers aren't receiving free energy, how are they paying for that energy right now?
The way the fuel cost rider is calculated, you take the total cost of fuel divided by the megawatt hours of sales, essentially. By removing both the costs and the megawatt hours, it has the implicit effect of replacing Prairie Rose at the average cost of energy for the system. However, in my supplemental direct testimony, I did point out that we do not believe replacement with average energy prices is proper. Rather, it should be marginal energy costs, which is truly representative of the cost that North Dakota ratepayers would have been paying had the Prairie Rose contract not been entered into.
Is that higher or lower than the average?
In today's current market, it's very similar. In periods when natural gas prices could be potentially high, if we see another spike in natural gas prices, marginal costs would be higher.
So it's variable, that marginal cost?
Both marginal and average are both variable.
On page 5 of your rebuttal testimony, you mention there are 4 biomass projects that Dr. Pavlovic recommends be excluded from the recovery. And these represent 120 megawatts of baseload resources. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you tell us what the names of those 4 projects are?
As listed on Exhibit B, Fiberman, Coda, Laurentian, and St. Paul Cogen.
How are these contracts selected?
These contracts were selected from various proposals. I believe the process began back in the late 90s, and these were which predated my involvement, so I don't know the specifics.
How about the Coda one? You had worked on the Coda one, is that correct?
I had worked on the Coda one. The Coda project was proposed to the company. It was not part of an RFP process. We did evaluate it for cost effectiveness and judge deemed it to be a reasonable price.
Was this part of an all-source process or biomass-only bidding?
There was no formal bidding process. It was we frequently receive proposals kind of on a one-off basis. Developers will approach the company and ask us if we want to review their proposal.
Do you know as to Fiberman or Laurentian or St. Paul Cogen, how those were those all-source bidding projects or not at all bidding projects?
I know they weren't part of an all-source bidding process.
So those were potentially biomass-only projects?
Correct.
How is the pricing calculated for these contracts, do you know, or if not all of them, the Coda one in particular?
Yeah, the developer would develop their pricing proposal.
I believe it was in your testimony you'd stated the company was required to procure biomass resources as a condition to continue operating its nuclear plant. Is that correct?
Correct. Again, predates my involvement, but my understanding is that as part of the agreement for dry cast storage at the Prairie Island nuclear site, that we were required to also acquire additional biomass resources.
Does that apply only to Prairie Island or both?
I don't recall specifically if it was Prairie Island only or Prairie Island and Monticello.
Is that requirement, is that a statutory obligation? Was that imposed by law or?
Commission order.
Okay, commission order. Did the commission require the company to purchase a certain amount of output in regards to these biomass projects?
My understanding is that it was a capacity requirement. Okay. So many megawatts, not necessarily megawatt hours.
Did the company at any point, do you know, express any concern at the pricing of these mandatory biomass projects that they had to invest in?
I do not know.
Do you know, is there a witness who might be able to testify?
I doubt it. it's reaching back pretty far.
Just a second, please. Mr. Wishart, do you have any familiarity with the St. Paul Cogen PPA?
I'm familiar with it.
Is that currently pending in the Minnesota jurisdiction, the approval of that?
The approval of the St. Paul Cogen?
Or is what's the status of that?
We're currently recovering the cost of that through our fuel cost rider in Minnesota.
Could you explain why the company doesn't believe the commission should review the PPAs in this case?
This is actually my first rate case, and I've been very impressed by the volume of material that's been being covered here. The company's request in the rate case was to increase our base rates portion of the customer's bill, with the fuel clause being a distinctly separate part of the customer's bill. I think it's important if we want to review these contracts that we do so thoroughly and thoughtfully. And given the amount of material being covered here, maybe we could give it more focus and more time that it deserves in a separate proceeding.
Yeah, the conversations with advocacy staff over here were kind of leaning that same direction too. You had mentioned in your opening statement that you talked about the benefits of the integrated system, that it benefits North Dakota ratepayers, and that you'd be open to addressing any other resource planning questions. Would you be open to discussing integrated resource planning at all?
Absolutely. One of my favorite topics.
There was some discussion of this yesterday, and so we kind of wanted to, we felt that we saw your title, I believe, is it the director of?
Director of Resource Planning.
Resource Planning, okay. How long have you been in that position?
A little over a year.
There was some talk, were you here at all yesterday?
I was down in the basement listening to the audio stream.
Okay. Oh. There was some talk yesterday about how the company meets peak loads, and so one of the things when we saw that the system planner was on the docket, we'd sure like to address that. And you've met, I believe, have you met with staff, not necessarily me, I'm similar to you, this is my first case and new. Have you met with staff on various occasions to explain how you do in integrated resource planning?
Yeah, we had a few meetings where we met in our offices in Minneapolis and discussed a wide variety of resource planning topics, yeah.
Could you explain how the company meets its peak demand on whatever day it occurs?
Everything on.
could you walk us through kind of early morning through the late evening? Just how does it work?
Sure. Operating in the MISO power pool, MISO is actually responsible for the dispatch of each individual unit. The process starts the day before when we submit our bids into MISO, telling them at what price our units would be available to run, in addition to some operating parameters associated with minimum run times and ramp rates. MISO receives all of that data in addition to load forecasts for the next day, puts it into a dispatch model, and then as load goes higher and higher, they dispatch the next least cost unit in merit order until total customer demand is met. Typically, in the morning time, we'll have all our baseload resources running, in addition to our intermediate combined cycle natural gas resources. And then as we reach the peak of the day, we will start activating our peakers. And then at the very maximum part of the day, we might also exercise load control. We have customers on special tariffs that they've agreed to reduce their loads in such very peak conditions in exchange for a discount.
So you've got a fleet of different kinds of generating units that are dispatched in a particular order, is that correct?
Correct.
And that order would be the least costly units to run and then supplemented with the higher cost units, is that?
Correct. And the order is general. It's not necessarily every single exact unit in order, but because there's several that are very close to each other and it's kind of interchangeable.
Okay. What do you do with the costly units when the system isn't peaking?
Pardon? Could you restate the question?
What do you do with those costly units? What's their status? Are they just sitting there turned off when the system isn't peaking?
Correct. Our peaking fleet operates on average maybe 5% of the hours over the course of the year. But on the other hand, they are also some of the cheapest units to build. So that's a strategy we take.
Would it be correct to say that once you have all the assets in place to meet peak demand, they're available for any other month's requirements?
No, that wouldn't be correct.
How so?
Scheduled maintenance is probably the biggest item. All units, even if they only run 5% of the year, are subject to being taken out of service, you know, for general repairs and making sure that they're available and reliable to meet that summer peak. Also, we have several resources, natural gas resources, that operate on interruptible gas contracts, which means that during the winter, there's many hours because most of the natural gas supply lines are being used for residential heating and commercial use, that those units are unavailable to run due to inability to access gas. We also have some contracts that are for summer only, bilateral contracts with other parties that are for summer only and are not available in the winter. One particular contract we have with Manitoba Hydro, it includes what's called a diversity exchange. We send them 350 megawatts of power during the winter, and they send us 350 megawatts of power during the summer. So that's essentially a 700 megawatt swing. We think that's a great deal because we really value the extra capacity in the summer. They really value the extra capacity in the winter, and it's a good exchange.
Would it be appropriate to say that one of your goals at NSP is to reduce peak demand?
We do have conservation programs that do impact customers' consumptions, but we don't specifically target peak demand.
You'd mentioned there were some clients who have contracts or customers who have contracts where they will pay a lower rate for having their power turned off or something. Is that correct?
Correct. I think the easiest example is our Saver Switch program. It's a computer device that is installed on residential customers' air conditioning units. And during periods of very high peak demand, we do this as the last step in our dispatch. We send out a signal that cycles their air conditioner on and off every 15 minutes. That has the impact of flattening out that very peak customer demand
Is that considered demand side management? Is that?
It's generally referred to demand side management or demand response.
Is it fair to say that you put those in place to avoid using the expensive peaking units then?
Not so much to avoid running our peaking units. It's a way to avoid having to build new peaking units.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being most likely, 1 being not at all, what are the chances that your system as a whole will peak in the summer?
It's just 10.
What causes that?
Cooling loads, the prevalence of residential cooling. I think in the good old days, monthly peaks might have been, a lot closer together, but now that everybody has an air conditioner in a home, I think that's really a driver.
Generally speaking, when you run those peakers, the most expensive units to run, when are you running those? Is that summertime?
It occurs in all months of the year. They're used more in the summer.
How do these purchase power agreements fit in with meeting peak demand and mesh in with the peaking units?
They contribute just like any other resource. Some are around the clock, 24/7. Some are on a scheduled. We have a different contract with Manitoba Hydro where they provide us just on peak power.
You'd mentioned MISO earlier, I think. Is it true that they establish a reserve margin that the company must maintain in order to meet peaks?
Correct. MISO does establish what's known as, it's called Module E. And through that process, every spring, we submit what are known as planning reserve credits. And those are based on how many megawatts of capacity we have. And we have to submit a sufficient number of those to meet our expected peak, plus a percentage on top of that for reliability. And they establish that extra percent on top, which is known as the reserve margin.
What happens if you don't have that reserve margin?
If we cannot submit enough credits, our first option would be to try to buy some from another party. They're exchangeable, throughout MISO. We could buy some from a neighbor. Alternately, the penalty is known as CONE, cost of new entry, and it's essentially based on the cost of a new peaker. So we kind of end up in the situation, we can build a new peaker or we can pay the cost of a new peaker. And I think it gives good incentive for us to, go ahead and build the resources that are needed to meet customer load.
When establishing that reserve margin, does MISO concern itself with shoulder months at all, or is it more of a?
I believe they do. They run a loss of load probability study. That is a simulation model that looks at every hour of the year. Obviously, at 4 a.m. in March, when load's very low, that has a small effect on the results, but every hour is considered.
Just a second, please. Does the result of that low loss probability establish a theoretical peak at all?
No, the peak demand that MISO will use is submitted by each individual member of MISO to MISO, and they aggregate it into one.
Does MISO, do they concern themselves, are they worried about when NSP has a scheduled outage for maintenance? Does that deviate the reserve margin?
They do take into account planned outages, I believe, in their loss of load probability study. And that's why that some of the other months have an impact too, because there might be large outages scheduled for winter when there's a winter peak. It's not as high as the summer, but there's definitely a winter peak too.
Can I ask you a couple questions just about transmission in general? Are you?
I'm not a transmission expert. Okay. I will do my best to try to answer the question.
Okay. Just, can you transport more or less energy on a hot day?
I believe during hot summer days, the transmission system is less efficient.
How about on a cold day, would it be more or less efficient?
As the temperature increases, I think transmission becomes less efficient. So colder would have more transport capability.
And if North Dakota's NSP operation peaks in the winter while the system-wide peaks in the summer, can it be said that North Dakota's proportional use of the transmission facility is less than the total system requirements?
I don't know that I can say that.
If NSP's North Dakota operation peaks in the winter and the system-wide peak occurs in the summer, can it be said that North Dakota's proportional use of transmission facilities is less than the total system requirements?
Repeat the last part of that question. North Dakota's
proportional use of the transmission facilities is less than the total system requirements.
I think you would have to look at, to assess North Dakota's proportional use of the transmission system, you would have to look at every hour of the day, not just the peak. I think that's important because you're using it off-peak too. Distance, I would suppose, would have to play into that. The distance to deliver energy to our customers, they might use proportionally more because of the distance associated with the whole thing.
Would the distance come into effect because there's no generation in North Dakota?
That would play into it, yes.
All right, I have no further
questions. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
I do, and I have some requests for the company, which I thought if Ryan took into the noon hour, I was just going to ask them of the attorney off the record. But
well, we are at 12 o'clock noon. Let me ask the commissioners how you want to proceed, because we're probably going to go a while yet with this witness. Do you want to break now for lunch? You want to finish with this witness? Break later?
I just understand our schedule to break until 1. I mean, but if there's any data requests right now, people, this would be a good time to throw them out. Mm-hmm. Like if there's something that one of us wants. Because I've already thought of like the Prairie Winds order that we did. Be nice to have that printed off before we get...
Yes, I can get that for you.
All right, then we will take lunch recess at this time. It is just about exactly 12 o'clock noon, and we will stand in recess until 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.